Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our guest is Christine Knight. She is a certified clinical hypnotherapist. She's dedicated her career and her life to helping people reconnect back to the disconnected parts of themselves. This will bring healing, peace, and abundance into their lives. Christine has taken the scenic route, in quotes, in her own healing journey from complex childhood developmental trauma over the past two decades. And now brings all of her experience, her education, and clinical hypnotherapy and mental health counseling to help you navigate your journey towards healing and wholeness. So welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's an honor to be here. I love the work that you're doing.
Thank you. And likewise, and I also noticed, like, reading your bio and stuff, we have some things in common. Like, we both have complex childhood trauma, and we both are professionals doing this work with complex post-traumatic stress. So tell us more about you. What in your bio did I not mention that you think it's really important for people to know out of the gate?
Out of the gate, I would say something really unique about me being a clinical hypnotherapist and having, I'm almost done with my master's degree in mental health counseling. And I am intertwining IFS, which is internal family systems, a model. It's a psychotherapy model developed by Richard Schwartz, PhD, who wrote No Bad Parts for the Public, which is a great book. I highly recommend it. It was just pivotal in my own healing journey. So I am intertwining the techniques, modalities, and models that have really worked well for me in my over two decades of really focused healing. I've taken what's really worked for me and put it into a program to help guide others. And that's hypnotherapy, and that's AFS, and then counseling with an emphasis on solution-focused brief therapy. So it's kind of a unique model. I meet clients where they are, but my job ultimately is to get them reconnected with the inner parts of themselves, get them aligned in their life and creating their own life so they don't need me.
Yeah, I'm really familiar with Dr. Richard's work on No Bad Parts. A lot of folks I've worked with have mentioned it on the podcast as well. What part in the book really stood out for you, either reading it or studying it or your own personal work, your recovery work? I'm always curious about the parts because I think some of them are super tricky.
That's a really good question. And some are really tricky when they're blended and you think that it's you, and it's really not you. It's a part, usually a manager part, who is trying to protect you and really guide your life and your environment. But what stood out, a huge aha moment for me, was the firefighter. I had two knee-jerk reactions that I would do. One was drinking alcohol, binging drinking, and the other one was leaving. I would leave the relationship. I would just shut down and just leave. And when I found out that those are really firefighter parts that came in because the manager part hadn't controlled the environment well enough to hold the pain away from ultimately the exile, which is the inner child, that the firefighter comes in, you know, blazing and destroying everything in its path, doing whatever it can to hold that pain away from that inner child. So much clicked, because I have a life where I've worked really hard and I've achieved a lot of things career-wise, education-wise, friendship and connections, but not in romantic relationships. It's been really, really rocky. And the parts therapy and hypnotherapy was huge game changer for that.
IFS. I still see an IFS practitioner once a week. I practice what I preach. I see my own hypnotherapist and I see my own IFS practitioner. And it's made a huge difference and in my own healing where it really hits that core, you know, and I think it hits people in different areas of their life. But very often complex childhood developmental trauma people are high achievers. Mm-hmm. In certain areas. And then there's always an area that kind of gets us.
Sticky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's our little maladaptive area. Because otherwise, you know, we'd have our shit together. And what fun would that be? You know, we have a maladaptive area.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me, like a lot of the parts work, you know, example, the firefighter, you know, are there to be protective of us, yet they create havoc at times. Can you say a little more about how people can see the pros and cons or the strengths or limitations of their parts?
Yes, definitely. Part of what I do, a major emphasis from Uncle Dickie, as we call him in the Institute, he really teaches. And there's some other people I study with in hypnotherapy, like Roy Hunter wrote about parts therapy, and he teaches it also, is that we are to reveal parts, acknowledge them, appreciate what they've been doing. And then we just kind of get on the same page with them, have an understanding of what life really is like now and what wisdom we bring as adult people now, because a lot of times they're stuck. They think that we're still 2, 5, 7, whatever. So what they're doing, they have the highest intention of protecting us and keeping us safe. And they're using strategies and false beliefs that they created back when the initial
trauma
event or relationship happened. And we just have to bring them to the current day and show them what it can look like. Let's figure out what energy, you know, you really want to use towards what jobs you really want to do. And let's integrate that. So that's where IFS weaves in with the parts therapy and hypnotherapy. And it's really important to know, that's what No Bad Parts really is a lot about too, is that all parts are welcome. We're not going to fight any part. We're not going to, you know, kill any part of us. It's a part of us and it's very important. And it got us through survival of some really hard times where we might not have survived. It might have broken our psyche. And that's why the part disconnected in the first place. So really acknowledging that and appreciating that piece then opens up the dialogue where they feel acknowledged and loved and accepted. So then they're willing to then listen to, you know, the client as to what life's like now and what the client wants to achieve now and how they can work together. So, and I mean, I learned this in my undergrad is in communications. Interpersonal communications. And it's funny that I took that in my undergrad because I switched from accounting and finance like 3 years in and switched it and added another 3 years onto my undergrad degree for the study of interpersonal communication. And basically in a nutshell, $40,000 in a sentence is effective communication is getting the receiver of the message to understand what we are saying. And that is nearly impossible unless we first listen to that person attentively, allow them to speak, allow them to be acknowledged, create that space where they feel accepted, acknowledged, appreciated, heard, then they can relax and then allow it in. Right. So, and that ties into, so after undergrad, I was like, oh, that ties into polyvagal theory mm-hmm. and the nervous system needing to be, you know, regulated and calm in order to receive messages because we can't receive messages in fight, flight, or freeze. So it's like, if this all makes sense, and it's amazing how much like
everything this, connects
since 1993, you know, mm-hmm. like all these things connect and form where I am now. And I'm overly grateful, completely, stunningly grateful for it all.
Awesome. So I'm curious, I think you explained that beautifully, by the way, that was very articulate, clearly you hit the ball of the park with that communications degree because you were very articulate with that. So I'm kind of curious if someone, like I have a lot of stubborn clients And I mean that really respectfully, because I think the stubbornness is part of the defense mechanism to protect ourselves. And I probably would classify myself as stubborn as well. But I'm curious about if when you have a stubborn client who may not be open-minded enough to do the parts work, what would you do with them?
Mm-hmm. What would I do with them?
Yeah.
I would regress them back to the original cause of their stubbornness and clear that first. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to do a regression before a parts therapy session. Sometimes I do a parts therapy session and end up regressing the part because the part doesn't know why it started dissociating. It just started dissociating. Then I ask permission, can we go back to the original cause? You know, and then I create an affect bridge based on the negative emotions, and that ties right back in. It comes out immediately. So that's what I would do as a mm-hmm. hypnotherapist. So that's
why I gotta ask you that. That's the role, because a lot of people, maybe if just a mental health counseling, may not know what taking them back to regression, how they would do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if I was just doing coaching, like let's say somebody's not open to hypnotherapy and, mm-hmm. and I'm just doing coaching with them, I would, number one, because this surprises people, I would celebrate their stubbornness
mm-hmm.
and reframe it into diligence in them trying to keep themselves safe.
Absolutely.
Let's celebrate that. You know what? Because let's look at what other areas in your life. This really helps you. Mm-hmm. Okay. But let's then look at, so again, we're creating that space by listening to them first, accepting them, hearing them, acknowledging them, create that space. And then say, okay, I get that it really helps you in finances. You don't spend money impulsively. This really helps you in your career, that you've, you know, done your work diligently and climbed the corporate ladder. Great. That's great. We want to keep those aspects in place. But where does it kind of block you? Where does it hinder you? Does it create disruption in your personal relationships? Does it create defensiveness where you're not able to see the opportunities right in front of you because you're trying so hard to keep yourself safe? And I get them to start becoming curious and really self-led with Dick Schwartz, mm-hmm. being self-led. One of the 8 C's of being self-led and the whole self is curiosity. So I get them being curious to where then they start, and this is also where I use specific strength-based questions from solution-based or
solution-focused.
Thank you. Solution-focused brief therapy into seeing how they can reframe those to use towards what they actually want to achieve in life. Because beautiful. Ultimately, in coaching and in hypnotherapy, we're trying to get from A to B. Simplified version. That's what we're doing. We're getting from A to B. So what do we need to do to see what we want to accept in current day life? And then what do we want to tweak in current day life to then get to be? So in all my life, I was defensive. I was stubborn. I was a fighter. I was everything that involved disconnection and shutdown, which, and I know that was from, you know, developmental trauma and this false beliefs created in the subconscious.
Right.
So I understand where they are and I meet them there and then pace them forward because I was in that position as being stubborn. What really worked for me? Did somebody preaching at me work for me?
No. Nope.
Telling me what to do? Nope. Listen to me? How does that serve? Tell me the areas where that serves you right now. Oh yeah, I can tell you that. Meet them where they are. Create that safe space.
Yeah. I really like the eclectic approach you have with the IFS, the solution focused, the hypnotherapy. It's a really beautiful combination. I do also do a mixture of techniques. It's not the same ones, but I do think that mixture just brings so much creativity to our practice, and it gives clients so many more avenues to explore what they are comfortable with and what will help them. So mm-hmm. I think that's beautiful. Tell us more about the offerings you have and the courses that you have.
I am creating an online course right now. I'm actually creating two.
One is weight well-being, because I find a lot of people who come to me for weight loss and weight mm-hmm. management actually have complex mm-hmm. childhood developmental trauma. It's a way of keeping our body safe. I have worked with the same issue in my own life. So that's why it's near and dear to my heart. And the other issue or the other program that I'm working on is I'm trying to work out the title because the title that came to my mind initially, and I try to follow my intuition. I don't know if it's approachable and welcoming and it's becoming human. So I was like a robot. You know, I said dissociation was my superpower because if I didn't like something, I was out of there. Yeah. Easy. So I had to learn how to go from disassociated, disconnected, defensive. Those were my 3 D's, into being open and curious and flowing with life, with intuition, instead of having to live life by the rules. That was my safety net. And whenever I dropped that, my code, I called it, that was how I knew what to do in each situation. But I could only know what to do in each situation that I had already encountered. So when I encountered situations I hadn't been in before, I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So it was learning how to flow with that intuition, which it had to come with parts therapy and IFS and getting connected and leading life that's self-led. So I'm not sure about the title of that, but ultimately it's how to go from those aspects of ourself that we created as defense mechanisms into the flow of life.
Yeah.
So, and that's a lot more complex, like weight loss and weight well-being. It seemed that it was easier because it's more surface level. You get through this, you're feeling good. You're seeing this achievement. Guess what that's going to do? That's going to peel back that layer. And the next layer is going to be exposed. The next part who needs acknowledgement and attention is going to be exposed. That's kind of how it then morphed into the other program for complex PTSD is a lot more complex. And how do I make it a program that's evergreen and can help a lot of people, but still uniquely speak to each individual person? So that takes a lot of maneuvering in that. But it's so important because my sessions are expensive for a lot of people. And I want a way to reach a lot of people with complex PTSD at a low cost. So it's really important for me to create that program to just have a wider range of offerings for a broader base of people who really need it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So tell us, if you're comfortable, more about your own personal traumas that led you to the work that you do. It's a tough question.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
just share what your intuition says is A-okay for today. Yeah.
I like to paint with a very broad brush because I don't want it to be too triggering for some people. I used to have PTSD spirals that could be set off just by somebody's story. Yep. Or a commercial on TV or anything like that. So I do want to be careful, but that's
our trigger warning, people. So if she says a word that you like, oh, it's a similar story, you have the option of just turning off the podcast and catching another episode. Mm-hmm. Okay. So respect your own personal boundaries. Okay.
Yeah, definitely care for yourself, or even just hit mute for just a minute or two. But I grew up in a very violent household, poor household. My dad was a physically abusive alcoholic. So I grew up with domestic violence to the point that I thought my mom had been killed on more than one occasion. So I also had sexual abuse, rape by a neighbor when I was, the best I can place it, 2.5 to 3 years old, based on the house that I see in that memory. So what happens is that parts of us become disconnected, forming false beliefs and strategies. The problem with that and being leading a life with fear at the forefront, The problem is that that actually does somehow attract it back in. I'm still doing, I'm looking at a PhD program because there's still so much work to be done, so much research to be done. Somehow we attract it back in, or we're
disconnected. Yeah.
Yes. Or we're disconnected and other abusers who are also in that realm can see it. So it's almost like they can see, and I hate to use the word prey, because I don't think it's intentional. I don't think abusers are intentional.
Sometimes. I would maybe disagree with you. I think sometimes they are.
I mean, there's times where they can be. I just, with like family friends, like the neighbor might have been intentional, wasn't a family friend. But family friends often, family members often are doing this sexual abuse behind closed doors, and it's not talked about, and it's not heard about from the children, or it is heard about from the children and it's not believed. So I know that there's parts that become disconnected and somehow attracted that in, because then what I did was I left home at a young age. I married an alcoholic, physically abusive man. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I got out of that situation, there was a firefighter that came in and got me out of that situation.
Wait, literal firefighter or the part?
The part.
Okay.
The part.
I was like, oh, you're dating firefighters too. Okay.
But then 3 years later, after I got out of that situation, I was raped. Mm-hmm. So I've been almost raped twice. I have been raped twice from the age of 15 to 32.
I'm sorry that happened.
It's very fascinating to me at this point. So I've done a lot of work around it. Self-blame, shame, guilt. What did I do to cause this? And it ultimately comes to self-forgiveness of doing the best I could with the tools that I had, mm-hmm. you know, at the time. And there's been a lot of healing work in my life. And it's amazing that it started out with an event like that at such a young age. And the relationship. So I had the event, initial event of a rape, and then I had the initial relationship of an alcoholic abusive father. And where does it show up for me now? With men. So isn't that fascinating? Isn't that fascinating? So
that's what you mean by being curious.
It makes me very curious. And I am in a surge of healing now because of multiple marriages and divorces, that it became obvious that there was the pattern. So that's something else. The part disconnects, forms these strategies and these false beliefs, and then it creates a pattern in our life. And then things keep happening to us. We think it's happening to us, but it's really happening because there's a pattern there that wants to be acknowledged. And until we acknowledge it and see the lesson, see the pattern, acknowledge the circumstances and heal them, you know, I believe the pattern's going to continue. But it was hard. I did everything. That's what I tell my clients. I have tried it. Believe me, I have tried everything to go around the problem. Mm-hmm. I'm an expert in going around the problem. It wasn't until hypnotherapy, clinical hypnotherapy education, and parts therapy and IFS where I turned and faced the problem. I moved across the country. I got married and divorced. I started businesses. I was flipping houses. Like I would do, climb corporate ladder, getting degrees, getting certifications, everything that I could to just run, stay so busy that I didn't have to look at the problem.
And then when you survivors are experts at that, for sure.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that we're such high achievers. But the way is through. The only way. I tried everything. The way is through, and it's scary. That's why I really think that we need counselors, therapists, coaches who know either they're very well educated or experienced in their own recovery or both to hold our hand.
My preference is both, by the way.
Yes. Because there's things you learn in a book, and then there's things that you learn from your own experience. And it's, you know, and I am very thankful that I have both. And that was part of my own journey of self-forgiveness and gratitude that started in 2020 with COVID. It started that journey. And I finally came to it really just this past April. It's not even been a full year yet, where I became grateful for the events and relationships that occurred in my life, because I learned how to heal them. And now I can help take somebody else's hand and help them learn how to heal them. So to me, when you have gratitude for it and you see the beauty in it,
that's a really hard stretch for people. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty happy when people can get to acceptance and seeing how they have strengths because of what's happened. Mm-hmm. That I'm not saying that having the gratitude is wrong. I think that's a beautiful place, but a lot of work before many can get there. Mm-hmm. But it's beautiful that you could.
It's a step-by-step journey. Next step, mm-hmm. next step, next layer. Pacing. It's not something that you jump from one to the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a progression.
So I know now you're working with professionals to keep your healing journey going. But when you, at the beginning of your healing journey, what was super helpful to you? Was it bibliotherapy? Was it Google? Like, what was helpful?
Hypnotherapy. The huge turning point, because I really started looking for answers and healing when I was 19. So, and I'm just almost 49 now. So that we're talking 30 years. And I tried the talk therapy and reading books, and that helped at a conscious level. And this is what I tell so many people, it's not your fault. Like, you get it consciously.
Right.
But then something happens and you're triggered and boom, you go into the polyvagal theory here. You go into the amygdala, your nervous system gets dysregulated, and here comes the firefighters. I was learning things consciously, but I was still having what I call PTSD spirals, where I could be triggered by the TV commercial. I could only watch PBS. At the time, we didn't have streaming, you know. I couldn't listen to the radio. I didn't know what song would come on next. So I would listen to heavy metal, because none of that had, you know, none of that had any kind of triggering for me. So I was trying to live a life with like this controlled environment, and I was in leadership roles in corporate America. So I had to, you know, have my stuff together. But this is something else that I'm really curious about. I think that we can, because I was a master at shoving down emotions, not feeling emotions at all. And this is part of my being a robot and my becoming human program that I'm working on. I didn't feel emotions at all. So a lot of times I've heard from clients and other stories and stuff that there's a major event in adult life. It could be stillbirth. It could be a car accident. It could be a divorce. Death of a parent. Some big event happens that triggers us, and where we can't shove it down anymore. So this happened to me when I was 33. I got divorced from my kid's dad, and we had been together. We've been married for 10 years, and it was a huge blow to me, where emotions came out and I didn't know how to handle them. I couldn't suppress them, didn't know how to handle them. I could keep up that front that I still had. I'm happy. I have my stuff together. I'm a leader in, you know, the corporate world, but these spirals would get triggered by things and I couldn't stop them. And the talk therapy, so I just tried going to therapists, and one who, he was a really good psychologist, PhD, he told me, where your anger comes from, where your you know, buried emotions come from early childhood. You cannot cure those. The best you can do is learn how to cope, learn how to manage them. And I said, watch me. See, this is an example of where it was good that I was stubborn.
That's right.
I went out looking for the cure for my PTSD spirals. Couldn't find it. Tried, you know, Reiki, tried energy healing, which was good on a conscious level, really helped me relax, help my nervous system. I'd be good until the next trigger happened. So the story is, I love this story. I was sitting on my couch in my apartment because I had lost my house to bankruptcy. I had filed bankruptcy, lost my house where my kid was used to living after the divorce. And I'm folding laundry in my apartment on a Saturday morning, watching PBS because I can't watch regular TV. And I'm watching a Wayne Dyer show and a lecture series that he was doing. And he was talking about being recently diagnosed with leukemia. And this person had written to him of using hypnotherapy to cure physical diseases. So he was talking about her, and then he said, come on out onto the stage and tell us about yourself. So she was there with him, like in the lecture, and she walked out on the stage. And as soon as I saw her, I was like, she's the one who's going to cure me. I knew it immediately. And at the end of the special, they gave her email address to reach out to her if you wanted to. I emailed her immediately, didn't hear anything back for 3 months. Then I heard back from her. She said, I'm going to be in Chicago at this hotel doing sessions for this, you know, chunk of days. It was maybe 3 or 4 days. If you want a session, you have to be there. So I'm a single mom.
You have money.
No support, no financial support at all. And I'm like, I have to go. So it just worked out that I had to go to California to work. And I took a layover on the way back, extended the layover for 24 hours to give me time to be at this hotel in Chicago, have the session done. So my company, because of the money that the 24-hour layover paid, my company paid for the hotel, because it actually saved them money, total package money. So I got the layover, stayed at the hotel, and then paid her. The fee was $800 for the hypnotherapy session, and it lasted like 4 hours. Life-changing. That's when my gratitude...
Who was it? Are you going to tell us who it was?
Who it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, her name's Mira Kelly, and she had done... At the end of the session, I was like, I was completely blown away. This is when my gratitude began. I saw the whole overview, like bird's eye view overview of my life, why things had happened, what I'm doing now, what I'm going to be doing in the future, life purpose, life mission kind of things. And I've written a book now that's in editing stages. And in the hypnotherapy session, my subconscious and the things going on in my subconscious kept saying, it's not for nothing. It's not for nothing. You're going to use this is gold. You're going to use this. So I want the title of my book to be, It's Not For Nothing. And then some subtitle that kind of explains to people what it is, how I use my pain to find my purpose, something like that. So I asked her at the end of the session, how do you know how to do this? Where did you learn this? I'm going to go do it. And she said, QHHT, which is quantum healing hypnosis technique by Dolores Cannon in Arkansas. So I flew down to Arkansas for a week and got trained in QHHT hypnosis technique and started doing that. That was 10, 11 years ago. Yeah. I started doing it on the side and did not grow it as a business or well-known service or anything at that time, because I was still in corporate, climbing the ladder, single mom, needed the benefits, you know. So I said, when my kid graduates high school, that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I did. Yeah, that was back in 2020. And then I got more training in clinical. I have over 1,000 hours of hypnotherapy training alone. So I got certified in clinical hypnotherapy and transpersonal hypnotherapy. So what I actually had done, not knowing it at that time, was transpersonal hypnotherapy. So it's very deep hypnosis trance, where you go into the subconscious, link up to superconscious, or Michael Newton calls it life between lives. It's kind of Brian Weiss with the past life regression. It's kind of like that as far as induction, but I didn't go to a past life. I just went to higher intelligence, all knowing, inner knowing. It was kind of like guides. They appeared as guides. And everything that I know now from my studies into, you know, ego states, regression, past life regression, hypnotherapy, parts therapy. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Is this something that exists spiritually? Or are these all constructs in our mind that we just have to tap into? Because you hear of very similar journeys with people who use psychedelics,
yep,
to tap into a deeper part of their mind. So it's a very similar experience that I would have had if I would have done like ayahuasca, right, just without the vomiting.
Now, do you help people virtually or does it have to be in person?
I can do either. I do online sessions and in-person sessions in my office. The QHHT, that associated, Dolores Cannon has passed now. My training with her was about a year, maybe 2 years before she passed. But her daughter, Julia Cannon, still runs that association and that academy and still has a very strict rule that it is only done in person. So if somebody comes to me and wants specifically a QHHT session, I have to do that in person. So I do fly to Pittsburgh about twice a year and I do sessions in person up there. And I also do sessions in person in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, where I live. But everything else, the other transpersonal, past life regression, life between lives, breath work, regression, parts therapy, I can do all that online. In fact, my hypnotherapist is in another state and online, and I can attest personally to the effectiveness of online sessions. There's no difference between online or in person.
Okay. So is there a license involved in being a hypnotherapist, like a state?
So there's five
regulated.
There's only five states in the U.S. that have it that regulated. Mine is not. And then I also fall under Florida regulations because I'm licensed through the accredited institute where I went to school. So I went to a Board of Education accredited. So there's only two schools in the country that are accredited through like the United States Board of Education. And that one is in Florida. It's called the Institute of Interpersonal Hypnotherapy, where I went. So, and their association, I now belong to their association. And so I abide by those ethics and guidelines and regulations, and then also the ACA. So there's no specific licensing required.
So you're free up to really work with anyone wherever they live.
And that's another reason in grad school, I changed from a licensed track to a non-licensed track into mental health counseling from family MFT, marriage and family therapy is what I was originally going for. And I switched and lost tons of credits because I was like, I don't want to be restricted to only working with people in South Carolina.
Right.
So I changed my program even in grad school because of that. I want that ability to work with especially people with complex PTSD, no matter where they live.
Right. Yeah. A lot of licensed therapists also get certified in coaching programs so they can try to help people. Mm-hmm. But it gets dicey and tricky, right, with licensing. I know I'm a licensed social worker and our clinical association is working on having our license be good throughout America. Cause I can work with anybody. Like I have clients in Ireland. That's fine, but not in Texas. I mean, it makes no sense. Right.
So. That's great. If they can, if they could do something like that, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah. And at the congressional level is what I'm hearing. So hopefully that will go through. And it's just good practice too. Like if you have a client that's, I work with a lot of service members. If they move, you don't want to be like, oh, well, it was nice working with you. See you later. I hope everything goes well at your next duty station. And they're in crisis. It's not cool. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I really hope that that happens sooner than later.
Yeah. So for anyone that like is listening to you and they feel a connection with you, they feel like, okay, hypnotherapy or parts work, that's the missing piece. Or wants to know more about solution focus, which is also really a great therapy. My residency or my internship was in that approach behind the one-way mirror. So I know it very, very well. I love it. I'm glad that you're doing that. But anyway, anyone that wants to work with you or ask you questions about how to work with you, where should they go to find you?
Yeah, the best place to go is my website. It's Christine Knight Hypnotherapy. com. They can schedule a free consultation call on my calendar right on the website. So they can see my calendar and just pick a time slot and put in their phone number, answer a couple of questions, and I'll call them. So my calendar is very packed at this point. So it's best to get on my calendar to make sure that it happens. If they can also call and email me from the information on the website directly if they prefer that, or want to try to get in touch with me sooner than later, because I think my call schedule is out maybe 10 days from now. It's booked. So if they do that, I will try. Like I was at work until 12:30 last night on a Saturday night. And like I will try to reach out to them as soon as possible and see what their needs are and how I can best support them.
Okay, perfect. I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today. I think you talked about some important therapy work in ways people may not have heard of it before. So I think that was really helpful. So we appreciate the gifts that you bring to us today.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was just an honor to be here and an honor to meet you. And thank you for the work that you're doing too. It's very much needed.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.